Merry, Merry Christmas. Do you know there's only 3 days till Christmas? Today's the 22nd. 3 days to Christmas. 3 days to mine and Miss Lovely, Miss Waggle's anniversary. So we celebrate tons of years together, happily in love. You know, Christmas started long, long ago. And originally it was actually a holiday that celebrated the moving on from winter into spring.
Boy, I love when that happens.
Christmas, original holiday, was a holiday of moving. Even though spring wasn't going to start the next day, it was a day that was celebrated, moving from cold, dark, to sunshine. All the things that we love, right? And so originally, people, lovely people, people of all places, celebrated this day, December 25th, as they were moving, preparing to get out of winter, dropping the coats into their bathing suits, into spring, into sunshine. And somewhere along the line, around the year 300, Roman Emperor started celebrating, decided instead of celebrating winter solstice, we're going to celebrate Christmas. We're going to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. So around the year 300 to 330-ish, somewhere in there, they started to celebrate the birth of Christ. Somewhere along the line, there was a man that entered. His name was Saint Nicholas. This man was considered to be a wonder-working, wonderful man. He prayed for sick people to be healed. It's even said that he brought babies, little kids, back to life that died. This man destroyed pagan temples. He even saved sailors who were stuck at sea. This man would give money to little kids and little gifts and candies, because dentists appreciated this man. But he would go out secretly, not publicly, not so that anybody would know, secretly in private, he would go out and pass out, give some money, candy, any little thing he could to bless someone. One time he even dropped money, and this is how some of our traditions got started. He dropped money down chimneys because there was three daughters that was going to be sold into slave prostitution. And so to save these three girls from being sold, he dropped money down the chimney so that the father could pay the money so that they would not have to be sold into slavery. He liked to give gifts. This man was a giver. He gave away all his inherited wealth that he got from his parents. He traveled constantly to help the sick and the poor. He was a pastor, considered a bishop. One of his greatest quotes was, "The giver of every good and perfect gift has called upon us to mimic God's giving by grace through faith, and this is not of ourselves." Similar to a Bible verse, but let me read it one more time. The giver of every good and perfect gift has called upon us to mimic God's giving by grace through faith, and this is not of ourselves. So Christmas, a holiday that we start to celebrate this week, started originally winter solstice, a day when people celebrated the death or moving on from winter darkness into spring and sunshine. And then a Roman emperor decided, no, we're going to celebrate, instead of winter solstice, it's Christ's birth, December 25th. Let's celebrate Christ's birth. Saint Nicholas, a man who was revered and honored and loved by many. And then somewhere along the line, 1863, a couple years back, there was a man, a cartoonist, who drew the picture of Santa Claus on a Coca-Cola can based on the stories of a man named Saint Nicholas. It's funny to see how traditions, how the holiday has changed over the years. You know, last year, there was $964 billion spent on Christmas. 2022, there was $936 billion spent. 2021, $889 billion spent. 2020, $783 billion spent. 34% of Americans buy food and special treats for their dogs on Christmas. 22% of Americans, only 22% buy for their cats on Christmas. Americans, except for two people that I know who are close to the family. They probably do. They're probably in that percentage for sure. Americans spend more on Christmas than any other country, and far more will use credit cards and debt so that they can spend and spend and keep on spending, baby. That's us Americans. This holiday celebrates the birth of Christ, a holiday that is centered around giving to help us to understand, you know, people along the way. Because how many of us know sometimes you have people who learn visually? There are people who learn by putting into action. There are people who can read a book and learn and soak up and sponge. But to kind of symbolize Christmas and really the understanding of what it means to give, there was people who created a story called the Christmas Carol. I don't know if you've ever heard of this Christmas Carol. But there is a man, Ebenezer Scrooge, and point at your neighbor and say, I hope you're not a Scrooge, because it could be about you then. I hope you're not Scrooge. How many of us have heard of this story? Ebenezer Scrooge, who was a selfish, stingy, greedy, self-centered, cold-hearted. He cared more about himself and his money than about anybody else. Until one night he was visited from three ghosts, showing him the past, the present, and things to come. And after spending a night with ghosts, this man who used to be selfish and self-centered, cold-hearted, he didn't care about the world. He only cared about himself and his money. Got to keep storing up my money. Got to keep storing up my wealth. This man who was so consumed with himself and his money, he did not care what happened to anyone else in his life. As long as my money is safe. But after a visit from three ghosts, his heart becomes reborn. His heart becomes reimagined. And you know what it's filled? All the darkness, all the coldness, all the selfishness started to melt away. And then his heart started pumping with love and grace, mercy and compassion. For some reason, humanity, I don't know why, but inside of us, we need stories and reminders. It seems that at times, all of us can turn into Ebenezer Scrooges. There are times where all of us, not with money, but sometimes we can become selfish, greedy, stingy, self-centered, cold-hearted in all areas of life, not just money. Financial, emotional, mental. And so sometimes through humanity, sometimes we need to be visited by our past, our present, and our future so that we can hear, so that we can remember this is not what life is all about. Today, our story and our text, there's someone who enters into humanity. And understanding that every one of us, we have a reason, and we all have reasons. We all have excuses, and they're all good excuses at times to do whatever it is we want to do. But through our traits, our characters, our emotions, our thoughts, being triggered and fueled by darkness, sometimes by the enemy, even the devil himself, sometimes to end at the worst version of ourselves, or to spend moments in darkness where it is just not a good place. And for many this year, it's a good time to pause, to stop, and to remember the real meaning of what Christmas is. Because if not, you're going to be visited by three ghosts. Just kidding. With that, we're going to open our first text, which is John chapter 8, starting in verse 1. Understanding John chapter 8, starting verse 1. My title today is Jesus Stepped In. Jesus Stepped In. John chapter 8, verse 1. And we're going to read through a few quick stories here. Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning he was back again at the temple. A crowd soon gathered, and he sat down and taught them. He was speaking to the teachers of religious law, and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. They put her in front of the crowd. Teacher, they said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses says we should stone her. What do you say? They were trying to trap him into saying something that could use against him. But Jesus stooped down, he wrote in the dust with his finger, They kept demanding an answer. So he stood up again and he said, all right, but let the one who's never sinned throw the first stone. Then he stooped down again and he wrote in the dust. Verse 9, when the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Jesus stood up again and said to the woman, where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you? No, Lord, she said. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. It's a beautiful story and it's a beautiful text. And this morning, to take a step back and understand, Christmas goes far beyond where it started, winter solstice. And it goes far beyond, even though St. Nicholas is a wonderful and a great man, it goes far beyond St. Nicholas. And it goes far beyond a man, a cartoonist, who decided to draw St. Nicholas as now the Santa Claus. There's so many stories and there's so many traditions, but the real meaning and understanding of Christmas found through the text and the reasons and understanding Christmas. And so this morning, as we pull up this picture, and we understand Jesus doing his daily thing, minding his own business, being a good boy just like the rest of us are good boys and good girls, he gets pulled into a trap. And he gets pulled into this trap. The religious people, they find someone who's in the act of committing adultery. So they knew where it happened. They knew what was going on. They watched. They knew. And so they pull these people out. And we see from the religious people understanding that these religious leaders of this day were willing to publicly humiliate someone to target somebody else. The religious people in this day had such a hatred for Jesus and people at this time, for certain people, that they were willing to publicly humiliate someone to target somebody else. They were willing, these lovely, wonderful people, to destroy one's life in an attempt to destroy someone else's life. I'm going to destroy your life, but I'm going to use in destroying your life to destroy somebody else's life. For the religious people, they picked and they chose who they wanted to destroy and who they wanted to let go. For these people, they wanted to pick and choose. They were picky on whose life to destroy and whose life we're going to set free. For these people, their words were ready 24/7 like rocks. Because they picked up rocks, because in the law, in the Old Testament, if you catch someone in the act of adultery, you can take rocks, much bigger than these rocks, and you can throw it at people who are caught in the act of adultery and kill them, throw rocks at them until they die. And so they bring this person. Now, we notice in the story, both parties were not brought out. We let the guy go free, right? And maybe he's one of the guys there who's standing in the group. We don't know. But they only bring out the lady. They're grabbing rocks. And they say to Jesus, hey, doesn't the law say we should kill somebody? Doesn't the law say we should judge somebody? Doesn't the law say we should condemn anybody who does this? Jesus, remember the title, Jesus stepping in. Jesus stepped in. And as Jesus, he didn't get angry. He didn't get mean. He didn't get cold-hearted. He didn't just jump back and attack him with a knife and a sword, which would have been cool because he probably had ninja powers, but he didn't do that. Or maybe a lightsaber. He had Star Wars powers. Even better. Anyway, Jesus, ignoring, not listening to their taunts, understanding their words were hidden traps. Jesus, understanding that their words, like rocks, again, these are kind of tiny little rocks, but if you throw a little rock hard enough at someone, what's going to happen? They're going to get hurt. And these people in this story, their words were like rocks, cold, hard, dark, mean, fierce. They wanted to take their words. They wanted to use their words. And this is what they did constantly, because this wasn't just a one-time situation. These Pharisees, these religious men, got themselves into trouble all the time with what? Their words. Even though they read the Bible, the first five books, the law, even though they understood Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, they understood the beginning. They understood the beginning and started God's plan. That did not change their heart for the better, because for some reason in their heart, they still had hatred. For some reason in their heart, they still had anger. For some reason in their heart, they were still full of insecurity. and fear and jealous because they were so jealous of Jesus. They wanted to destroy his life. And so they used their words like little rocks because they wanted to destroy somebody's life. And I wonder this morning, if we take a look at this story and just understand the symbolism of how people treat people, have we changed one bit? Are there people today who are still seeking to destroy other life? And they'll use anyone and any person and anything they can to destroy another soul. And they don't care. They don't care who gets damaged and hurt and scarred in the process. Do we still have humans, wonderful people today, who use their words as mean rocks? And I don't care. This is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to chuck this rock at you. I'm going to let this word fly out of my mouth, and I'm going to hurt you with my words, my rocks. That for some people, they had rocks in their heart back then, and some of us sometimes still have rocks in our hearts still because there's things that slip sometimes that just aren't very nice. This story starting symbolizing seeing humanity and understanding Christmas and understanding why the gift was given. Humanity was broken then, but you know what? Humanity, it's still broken now. Our second text this morning, Matthew chapter 9, starting verse 9. Jesus was walking along and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at a tax collector's booth. "Follow me, be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So Matthew got up and he followed him. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples, his home, his dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. But when the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with such scum?" They're so sweet, aren't they? Man, just hanging out with these guys, right? Who needs enemies? You got the religious and the Pharisees. But secondly, I want to understand the first text I brought up to paint this picture and to symbolize in humanity and this brokenness, what we do sometimes to one another out of judgment, out of condemnation with our words. And so this second text, I bring this up. The Pharisees were now mad that Jesus was having dinner with tax collectors. And they even go as far to call them scum. And it paints this picture of the religious leaders who separated themselves from everyone else. They separated themselves from everybody else because they were above. They had different kinds of clothing. They had special food. They were allowed to go to special places. They lived a separated life. And God does call us at the same time to live separated from certain things and certain people as well. But it's different from this. Because how many of us know people, maybe based on religion, "Oh no, I'm not going to talk to that person." You know, based on color still, how many people still won't talk to certain people? They're different. How many people based on genders? How many people based on, you can just tell that person's got issues. I ain't going close to that person. So many people, even here and even now, are still separating. I got to be separated. I don't want to get close to that person. I can't get close to that person. I can't be around you. And for many people, how many of us know we get stuck in groups? When you go to high school, you got jocks. You got nerds, you got people who, you know, let's call them IT geeks who are super good at technology. You had people in drama and dance. And how many people? And then you had troublemakers. And all of us this morning, just like in junior high and high school, getting stuck in little groups. The Bible here, this is what they're talking about. They were pushed into groups. You had your religious people, you had your non-religious people. And even today, we have not changed because how many of us still at church? We still have our cliques and we still have our groups. We still, if you fit in with me, if I'm comfortable around you, you are more than welcome into my group. Matthew, Jesus goes on to say, Matthew 9:13, he added, "Now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. I want to show you mercy, not offer sacrifices. I've not come to call those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are sinners. And Jesus pointing out in this text that people understanding the very basics, one of the things of humanity that people need to understand, that we all have humble beginnings, no matter where we came from, no matter if our parents had money, no matter what town, state, country we are from, that we all, every single person on this planet, Jesus said, I didn't come to call those who think they're good. I've come to call everybody who understand. There's basic beginnings for all of us. And to live a life not like the religious leaders who are constantly pushing people into their own groups. Well, if you're like this, you go into that group. Well, if you're this kind of person, you're going to go into that group. He hasn't called us here to divide people. Even within the church, there's hundreds of different types of Christians in this world today. God didn't call us to be 3 million different religions, right? There's one God, one religion. But yet we as people, for some reason, we find our comfortability by being in a group. There's no group, right? We're all people. We're all meant to be together. And again, within stating that God at some point, yes, there are times where we should live separated from certain things and certain people. Our third story, John 13, verse 1, Jesus, before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that the hour had come to leave this world, and he was returning to his Father. He loved his disciples during the ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything, and that he'd come from God, and he would return to God. He got up from the table. He took off his robe. He wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into a basin. He began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around him. When Jesus came to Simon Peter, Peter said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you don't understand now what I'm doing, but someday you will. And how about that? It had that on the wrong verse on the screen. Sorry. No, Peter replied. He protested. You will never ever wash my feet. Jesus replied, unless I wash you, you won't belong to me. Simon Peter exclaimed, then wash my hands, my head as well. Lord, not just my feet. The title today, Jesus stepped in. When we look at three different examples where Jesus had to, he needed to, and he wanted to, what did he do? He stepped into humanity. He stepped into moments and situations to speak loud, to teach, to preach, to show us, to understand these moments. Here's a story in a setting where Jesus was getting ready to die. He was going to be crucified. He knew that he was going to get beat. He knew all the torture and all the horrible things that he was going to do. And so he has this last supper with his 12 disciples. But as they get there, to understand, every single year, they certain celebrations and feasts, and so they would have the Passover, and someone, usually the main jefe of the house, the man, would get together all the preparations and all the food, and then he would recount the story of how the Jewish people were delivered from Egypt, from the hands of Pharaoh. The main guy in the story, the house, he would deliver a message of remembering and honoring. This is how the Jewish people, this is where we came from. We once were slaves. We once lived in Egypt. And Pharaoh, we used to beat our people. But God delivered us. And so they would go through this whole story of all the plagues. And so as Jesus gets there and the disciples are there and the dinner's being ready, there's no servant as they entered the house to wash their feet. Every time you walked into a house, your feet would be washed by someone. Every time you walked, because the roads were dirty, and see, if your hands and feet had dirt on them, you're considered dirty, and you can't eat. You can't eat without washing your hands. Just like if you deal with food, ever cook at a restaurant or go through any kind of food service thing, the number one thing they tell you is wash your hands. And wash your hands, and wash your hands, and wash your hands. And so Jesus gets to the house, and there's no one there. There's no one there to wash the feet. They're all dirty, they're gross, they're disgusting. And so what do? They all just decided to skip that moment and sit down. Let's dig in. Let's just bypass one of the old traditions. And I think for a minute, if you think about the disciples, maybe they're confused because they're knowing that Jesus, sometimes he talks about following the traditions. And then there's other times where Jesus is breaking certain traditions. So maybe they have no clue. They don't understand. But regardless, they sit down, and then Jesus who's the Son of God. He's the Savior. He's the Messiah. He stepped in to paint the picture of, I'm the Son of God. I'm the Savior. I'm the Messiah. But I'm not so high and mighty that I can't get down on my knees and serve every one of you. And he shows them in this picture and in this moment and in this time, no one, not one of the other disciples, wanted to grab the basin to wash the feet. No one wanted that dirty job. Just like no one likes cleaning, you know, the bathrooms. No one likes to clean up vomit and all that gross stuff. There is a lot of dirty jobs. There's a show called Dirty Jobs, right? There's a lot of dirty jobs in our world that many people avoid, and they run and they hide and they don't want to do. There was a dirty job in this moment, and the disciples bypassed and ignored. They knew, I can't sit down and eat unless my hands, my feet are clean. So who stepped in to the moment to say, I'm God, but even though I'm God, I'm not so high and mighty that I can't get down on my knees and serve you? Jesus said at a couple of points, he said, listen, I didn't come for you to serve me, but I came to serve you. And if you really let that sink in our heart, mind, and soul to understand, my God, my Messiah, he didn't come to the planet to be served. Even though he walked on water, even though there was no sickness, anytime anyone with sickness came near Jesus, it was instantly healed. People were delivered from demons. There were so many great things that happened. But at every moment and every point in every situation where Jesus stepped in, there's a few loud things that he points out. And we say this text right here to understand when humanity, when people did not want to lower themselves to a task that seemed gross and disgusting, who stepped in? Jesus stepped in. When men, humanity, wanted to call other people scum and say horrible things about other people, and Jesus shouldn't be associated with this and shouldn't be associated with that, we should stay separated, who stepped in? Jesus, the Son of God, stepped in. When there was a woman caught in an act that nobody should talk about, we don't want to talk about that. We don't bring up people's junk in the trunk. When the Pharisees, when the religious leaders wanted to kill her, when they wanted to take large stones and kill her, and they also wanted to destroy Jesus and his life, who stepped in? Jesus. How did he react? Did he overreact? Because how many of us know that's when we get in trouble? When we over what? React. How many of us know that sometimes when we overspeak, when there's too many words, there's sinful actions, things just start flying off the handle? Jesus, as this woman's being accused, what does he do? He gets down on the dirt. He gets down on the level where there's a broken person. Jesus got down on the ground where there was someone who was crying, ashamed, and probably thinking, I'm going to die at any second here. Jesus got down to the ground to see at eye level. And the thing that is crazy and amazing about Jesus, we know that he was full of 100% grace and 100% full of truth. So at every moment and every interaction, when he looked at you, he didn't just see your eyes and your eye color. He looked to the depths of your soul. And every interaction that Jesus had, because it was so powerful, to be full of so much love and compassion and mercy and truth. When you saw this guy, it wasn't weird. It wasn't crazy. But you just knew, man, this guy is awesome. He gets down in the dirt as he looks at this lady. Everyone walks away. Because what did he say to the older religious people? He said, sure, let's go ahead and kill her. But the only one who can throw a rock is somebody who's never sinned before. Who's ever perfect in the crowd. Whoever you out there, if you've never committed a crime or sin, you're the one. You can throw the rock. And there was only one person in that group who had that authority, right? And the person that was Jesus. And so what did it say? The men just started walking away because their trapped failed. Their condemnation that they had, the anger and the bitterness that they had towards Jesus, it all melted away because Jesus said, listen, can you stop living by what you say about other people? And can you start living your life by managing just yourself? Can you stop judging? Can you stop talking? Can you stop hurting? Can you stop being violent and angry with the things that you say and just deal with the things that are in your heart? There's plenty in your heart to deal with. The men, understanding that Jesus had the upper hand, they all walked away. And he says to this young lady who's there, "Where are the people who wanted to condemn you?" "They're gone." And Jesus says, "I don't condemn you either, but don't do this again." To be in a moment understanding that you could have died and you should have died. There is people who did die from this very act. To be in a moment to understand I'm living a life knowing it's wrong. I'm doing things that I should not be doing. I'm committing, I'm thinking, I'm doing acts that break God's heart. I'm doing things that really hurt my Creator. For this person in the story to understand as she's sitting there, probably trembling, probably crying, thinking life is going to end, someone stepped in, said, "I'm giving you a second chance. But don't abuse my second chance. Don't just take this second chance and just run back to your old ways. It's time for a new life." Jesus had to step in. Riley, if you can come up here for a second, I'm going to have you help me with a couple cups here, my friend. If you can stand right here so we can get everybody seeing you. This morning I have a couple illustrations. And the first one, if you can take that right in there. We're going to have to open one of these.
You have to take the bed there, too. We're going to do some stabbing. It's going to be fun stuff. We're going to get out some.
Everybody said hi to Riley. Now, if you were to look at this lovely paper cup, and I don't know if you know, but foam is banned in California next week, so there's no more foam that will be allowed into California. All manufacturers, that's really beyond the point, but this morning I just thought I'd bring it up. But anyway, what Riley has in his hand this morning is this fragile, wonderful, at times can be a firm cup that could hold hot, lovely liquid, like coffee. This cup kind of speaking sometimes of life and how sometimes at life it seems so all together, but yet at the same time, life can be so fragile. You see, in the beginning, as God created man and a woman, there was someone who was on the side and there was someone who was lurking. And as he was lurking, as he was studying, as he was watching, as he was looking at, yes. As he was standing and as he was looking, as he was looking at how powerful Adam was, because dude, he had to be buff. You know, God created him from the dust of the ground. He looked good. And then he created Eve from the rib of Adam, so she had to be beautiful too, right? This stunning couple is like Ken and Barbie, right? He saw how tough they looked on the outside, but yet he understood how fragile they were on the inside. So you know what this guy started thinking? I just need to find a way to get a little hole, maybe a little pen hole in that cup. Maybe just taking that pen and just sticking at the bottom. Sticking at the bottom. Beautiful, beautiful. And you know what happens? Like Adam and Eve, we saw. It's okay, we're going to make a little mess. Yeah, you don't want to get yourself wet. You know, once you get a little pinhole in these fragile lives. You know, I was originally going to get a bowl and hold all the water. But you know, I thought, that's not really how life is. Someone doesn't always catch us. Sometimes there are people who aren't there when life starts to get messy. No matter how many times we say, "I'm going to be there for you." No matter how many times people say, "I got your back." When something really happens, sometimes, man, we all alone and it just keeps dripping and dripping and dripping. And life gets messy because, again, sometimes, no matter how cool and designer look, we got little lines, little words on the outside, and how good we look on the outside, we're still fragile people on the inside. And the devil and the enemy from the very beginning says, "I just got to get a little pinhole. Man, I just got to get a little pinhole. And then maybe I need a second pinhole. Maybe I need another. Because how many of us know, the thing is, once the devil gets a little in, how many of us know, man, he's just got his second in. Man, once we just give him a little bit, right? Oh, yeah. And the water really starts to go. Does it make you thirsty?
No, thank
you. Yeah. Give Riley a hand. That was awesome. Good job. Thank you. You know, in this once, nice, firm, tough, on the outside, hard as nails, can eat glass, but yet on the inside, still fragile, cup, because the devil was allowed to get a little pinhole, and once the devil was allowed a little bit, he took a little bit more, and you know what happens in life sometimes, the hole just keeps getting bigger. A little bit more, and just a little bit more. Humanity, for a long time, humanity has been broken. We saw it in the stories that we read. Two people caught in the act of adultery, but we're going to destroy one life and attempt to destroy somebody else's. Today, we still have people doing the exact same thing. There's evil men and women with evil intentions who really want to hurt, for whatever reason, innocent, nice people. There are evil people who have anger in their hearts, maybe from a hard life, maybe from a hard past, maybe from, you know, being young at a young age. Life was just extremely hard, so they're going to take it out on the rest of the world. I'm going to destroy your life because I felt like mine was destroyed, so I have the right to destroy you. In our second story, we see humanity then as it is now, where men were just evil with their words, calling other people scum just because they were tax collectors. And none of us have ever talked about the IRS like that. We only say good things about the IRS. But back then, the men who called these guys scum, have our words changed, really? Today, because how many of us still use our words like rocks to destroy something hard, something hurtful, something that could put a crack in the windshield? And lastly, our story of Jesus, we see no one wanted to step down and get on the ground and get dirty and touch other people's stinky feet and be considered maybe as lowly as a servant. And so through all three stories, through all three texts, if we go back now to our beginning text, if you have your Bibles, we're going to go to Luke chapter 2. Luke 2, starting in verse 1, which was our beginning text that we opened up this morning. At that time, a Roman emperor, lovely guy, decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This is the first census taken when this guy, this governor of Syria, returned. And he says, you all must return to your own ancestral towns to register for the census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. And it's such a crazy story this morning. Christmas, in our very beginning, we started with the origin of a holiday that was to celebrate the change from when it was dark, when it was cold, when it's dreary, into a better day when spring was coming. And that day, by a guy, decided, let's not call it winter solstice anymore. Let's call it Christmas, where we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. This day, this holiday that was meant to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ was turned into celebrate a man. And not just Jesus anymore. There was a man called Saint Nicholas who was an amazing man. He was called a wonder worker. His heart, he was to give. He spent all of his money and he took his inheritance, giving out all of his money. He believed in taking care of the less fortunate, taking care of the widows and the little kids. This man who had a gift, the Holy Spirit was inside of him because when he prayed for people, they were healed. There were babies, a few that came back to life, had diseases. Saint Nicholas was a good man because he wanted to pay the ransom and the debt for people so they didn't have to be sold into slavery. He gave his life for what? He gave his life for others. And his life was not meant to be put above anybody else's, but his life was to point to someone else who stepped into humanity. And his name is Jesus. This gift, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son. God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, Jesus. For whoever would believe would not perish, but have everlasting life. Jesus stepped into humanity. Jesus stepped into situations that were considered dirty and weird and awkward. Jesus stepped into these moments perfectly, showing us as he stepped into there, there was a big difference. How many of us remember the name Ebenezer Scrooge? There was a big difference from a man who's painted as greedy, stingy, cold-hearted, kind of maybe like the devil, like our enemy, this guy who rules in darkness. There is a clear difference between the enemy and Jesus. He said the thief, the enemy, he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. That enemy comes to destroy. Oh, yeah. That thief, that enemy, he comes to steal, kill, and destroy your life. But Jesus said, I've come to restore your life. Jesus said, I've come to save your life. I've come to redeem your life and to pay the ransom that's owed on your head. I've come. I've come to give you life, life that is so full. Only my life can be put into a broken cup where nothing spills out. You see, Jesus painted this story and picture in the Old Testament with a guy named Abraham. And as he painted this story and picture in the beginning, as God was describing Christianity, he was describing what it meant to follow him. He calls a guy named Abram. He says, come follow me, and I'm going to bless you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to make your life a blessing so that it's a blessing. You see, these fragile lives, they're not meant just to be spilled and poured out wherever we go, like a leaky cup.
Brian, you did it. You walked through the door, man. You caused
these lives are not meant to be like fragile cups that just everywhere you go, you're spilling. But how many of us know sometimes when we get frustrated, we get angry, we're just spilling everything everywhere we go and everything that we do. Our lives are not meant to be that. Our lives are meant to be blessed, to be a blessing, so that our cup becomes so full of water, it doesn't fall out the bottom, it doesn't come out the bottom. You're able to pour it into somebody else's cup. Because life, like Ebenezer Scrooge learned, it's not about me and what I store, but life is about what I give. And St. Nicholas, not Santa Claus, St. Nicholas was a real man who learned life is not about me, but life, it's about what I do for you. Life is about what I give. And lastly this morning, as we fully wrap up, have any of us ever been given a gift? Said, I don't want to open that gift. I don't know if I trust the source. Could be a bomb in there. Somebody's got a bomb. Somebody's got something they don't like. I'm just going to not open it. Were you ever given a gift that was really cool and you said, you know what? I'm just going to leave it in the wrapper. Leave it in the box. Never going to take it out. Never going to use it. See, this Christmas, this season, it's important to understand that God's given humanity a gift. His name is Jesus. But some of us, we've taken off a little bit of the wrapping paper. That's all I needed to see. I gotta get a little bit of Jesus. Ooh, whew, that truth, that hurt. It's like going to the dentist. He's going to pull your teeth out. Bzzz. I've got a little glimpse, but I don't want to fully open up the box. Man, what's going to happen if I fully open the box? The Christmas story. Jesus stepping into humanity, knowing that we're all born broken. We all need to be fixed. We all need to be healed. We all need to be repaired. We all need to be redeemed. Jesus, like this gift that was given, just sometimes for some of us, we don't fully open the box. And we don't fully open up the story. We don't fully open up every word. Because we want to pick and choose. That sounds good. I want this, but I don't want this over here. He's getting a little too personal. Jesus, cut it out. You're a gentleman. That's getting too personal. As we wrap and close this morning, it's a beautiful Christmas story. It's a beautiful Christmas season. And to fully understand the gift, it must be fully embraced. And as those men were asked by Jesus to take a deep look inside this morning, do any of us need to take a deep look inside to say, am I fully embracing his gift? Have I fully accepted the gift? Because Jesus stepped in humanity for me. Jesus stepped in humanity for you. 2 Corinthians 4:5 says, you see, we don't go around preaching about ourselves. See, Paul says we're all preachers, and some preach about themselves. Some preach about their life. We're all preachers. Paul says, I decided I'm not going to preach about myself. We preach Jesus Christ as Lord. We ourselves are servants for Jesus' sake. God said, let there be light in darkness. He made this light shine in our heart so we can know the glory of God that is seen in the face of Jesus Christ. We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves, we're like fragile jars of clay. We're like fragile paper cups that can hold a great treasure. That makes it clear that our great power, it's not from us, but the power comes from God. Because we get pressed on every side by trouble, but we're never crushed. We get perplexed, but we're never driven to despair. We're hunted down, but we're never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are never, ever destroyed. Because through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus can also be seen in our bodies. What was described as a fragile jar of clay or a fragile cup, life that's been given, it's so beautiful, it's so wonderful, but it can be gone in a second. At every single moment and at every single waking turn, the important question is, who is holding my cup? Because when God holds it, nothing will leak. If I'm holding my own cup, it's just going to continue to spill. Is the gift of Jesus, the gift of Christmas this morning, fully embraced in every part of our life? Or are there some things like rocks, scars, triggers, issues that we don't want to let God deal with? Let's pray.